Let's start with Bahrain. Blood is being shed to the sound of the international community shrugging its shoulders. How many more weeks are we going to have to say that?
Saudi Arabia has long been a staunch ally for Britain and America. At the same time, the West turns a blind eye to the darker side of the Saudi regime.
President Ali Abdullah Saleh turned to his neighbour Saudi Arabia to mediate an end to the bloody revolution, which could plunge Yemen back into a civil war.
What happened today is a real massacre.
The president insulted us because he has become bankrupt.
Ali Abdullah Saleh didn't find the army who can kill. We promise this week or next week we will send flowers to those armies in the presidential palace. We'll go to there, not to kill. Not to make a violence, we will send flowers and say to Ali Abdullah Saleh, bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Kabit Ahway, and I'll be bringing you those stories for this week's edition of Reality Check, with a special focus on the tiny Persian Gulf island of Bahrain, whose revolution is now dwarfed by violations of human rights, which the world is slowly but surely taking notice. Starting off with Yemen, most of his allies have abandoned him. A popular uprising against him is now in its third month and is rapidly growing. But Yemen's embattled president has so far defied gravity and managed to cling to power.
President Ali Abdullah Saleh turned to his neighbour Saudi Arabia to mediate an end to the bloody revolution, which could plunge Yemen back into a civil war. But if the strong man who has ruled over Yemen for 32 years was hoping for Saudi backing, it looks as though he's been double-crossed by Riyadh. Saudi, through the Gulf Cooperation Council, is advising him to step down in favour of a transitional ruling council. Details are supposed to be thrashed out at a meeting in Riyadh soon, although Saleh himself has not confirmed if he will even take part.
Yemen is the only country in the Arabian Peninsula that is not a member of the GCC, after Saudi Arabia excluded it because of its republican form of government. Historically, Saudi relations with Yemen had been problematic. In 1934, King Abdulaziz sent his army into Yemen in an unsuccessful effort to conquer the country. In November 1962, Egypt tried to intimidate Riyadh into withdrawing its support of the Yemeni royalists in their unsuccessful struggle to regain control from the republican regime backed by Cairo. Following the June 1967 Arab-Israeli War, Saudi Arabia and Egypt resolved their differences with Riyadh, accepting the republican government in Sana'a. After Britain granted independence to its former colony of Aden in 1967, a self-proclaimed Marxist government gained control of the entire area. Riyadh became preoccupied with containing the spread of Aden's Marxist ideas to the rest of the Arabian Peninsula and Persian Gulf. Yemeni President Ali Abdullah Saleh recently appealed to the Saudi government to mediate between the Saleh regime and opposition forces, but now the Saudis are also urging the president to step down.
43 mosques and mourning halls burnt by Bahraini and Saudi forces since mid-February. Arbitrary detentions, torture. The situation in Bahrain is alarming, and the world needs to take notice. This is an all-out attack on humanity.
I spent 10 days working undercover in Bahrain, filming the violent crackdown on dissent the Bahraini government doesn't want the world to see. From arbitrary arrests to the use of live fire against unarmed civilians, the state's repression now targets Bahrain's entire Shia population. In the besieged village of Bani Jamra, human rights activist Nabil Rajab explains the situation.
Well, as you see now, the situation is critical, and as the tank is everywhere in the street, all the villages are sieged by the GCC forces, and people still protesting, and we have one guy died yesterday, and we have tens of people injured. I mean, it's sad, sad that we can't take them to any hospital, because the only hospital that we have has been taken by the government.
In the village of Sa'a, I attended the funeral of a 15-year-old boy, Syed Ahmed Shams, who was shot in the face by police while playing football with his friends.
And I think what has happened here is that there is a lot of confusion. And I think the Foreign Office has been making it very clear. They want to know what's happening, why it's happening, and to try and understand not only the government side, but also what the people are complaining and protesting about. Because Bahrain, we've had a very long history of friendship with Bahrain and the people of Bahrain.
This is the funeral of a 15-year-old boy who was shot in the face by the police while playing football. His family asked me to show this to the government in Britain. They want Britain to intervene in the same way Britain has in Libya.
Have you passed this on to the government?
I'm trying to pass this on to the Foreign Office. Do you expect any actual practical outcome if I do?
Well, I would like to think we can say to the Bahrainis there should be a full inquiry, as we're doing when one of our own people was pushed at.
BBC have refused all our requests for an interview, but the consequences of its silence are clear. When even politicians can complain they don't understand the true horror of the situation in Bahrain, then something terribly wrong has happened to the media here in the UK.
This is actually the biggest revolution in the Arab world relative to its population.
Moving on to the program Islam and Life, whose host Tariq Ramadan asked,
in today's show we ask the question, how should Muslims tackle the hate crimes committed against them?
A rise in the number of hate crimes against Muslims in London is being encouraged by mainstream politicians and sections of the media. A study written by a former Scotland Yard counter-terrorism officer suggests. Attacks ranging from death threats and murder to persistent low-level assaults, such as spitting and name-calling, are in part whipped up by extremists and sections of mainstream society. The report provides empirical evidence to demonstrate that assailants of Muslims are invariably motivated by a negative view of Muslims they have acquired from either mainstream or extremist national reports or commentaries in the media. The study states it was the prosecution and presentation of the war on terror by governments and the media that prompted an outbreak of anti-Muslim street violence. Islam and Life will investigate how should Muslims tackle the hate crimes committed against them.
Vittorio Arrigoni, Italian activist, peace campaigner, stood for the Palestinian cause in the Gaza Strip, killed by Saudi-backed Salafists. May he rest in peace.
Why? What did he do? This is a man who came to break the siege on Gaza. Why? What did he do? He came from across the world left his country and family and his entire life and came here to break the siege. And they kill him? Why? What is the reason?
What do Jews in Israel think of Palestinians? Author Max Blumenthal in the program Autograph presented some interviews that he had held with Jews while in Israel, whose comments are a reflection of Israel's officials as well.
Jews don't want to hate anybody. Jewish people are innately happy and they want to praise God and they want to live in peace. It doesn't make sense that you guys can't simply understand. If you try and hurt somebody, you want to hurt their family, you know, you have to stop those people. Well, if they're trying to burn down your house, you got to put water. But if they do it every day, you got to just annihilate them.
Palestinian people is actually a modern invention. It's a propaganda invention.
You're from the U.S.?
Canada.
Canada? Are you like a lone soldier?
I am.
You fear? So that's only in occupied territories.
Well, it's not occupied.
It's not occupied? Oh, I don't understand.
You explain to me why it is, I'll explain to you why it's not.
It says occupied territories on the map. They're under living under military rule.
Actually, they say that I spoke to Arabs, and they told me that they'd rather live under Israeli rule than under Arab rule.
The mood in Israel is extremely right-wing, and I think it will remain that way until the country is effectively de-Zionized. And what by that I mean all of their laws and policies that discriminate in favor of anyone who can prove that they have Jewish ethnicity are essentially wiped away.
Looking at Saudi Arabia, does being a king mean that you're above the law, that you can order killings? In the program, the big story, Amina Taylor's guests made a comparison of Saudi Arabia, which concluded that Saudi Arabia is as lawless as the Middle Ages.
Saudi Arabia has long been a staunch ally for Britain and America. In a deal that developed into its modern form in the 1960s, the House of Saud guarantees a continuing supply of oil for the West, and in return, the West supports this authoritarian power. At the same time, the West turns a blind eye to the darker side of the Saudi regime.
If you ask about which legal protection or legal rights are in Saudi Arabia, then let me tell you the real description which a European, someone grown and educated in Europe will appreciate that is to compare Saudi Arabia with some European countries in the time past. Once the Wall Street Journal, a writer there said, the Saudis are our friends, oil is very important, we have somehow to deal with them, although we know that they are in the historic level of King Henry VIII. Actually, he was quite optimistic. My belief firmly is that they are on the historic level of Edward III, Longshank. I'm taking Edward III specifically because we saw him in Braveheart. Although some people say it's not historical 100%, but let's assume it's a little bit historical. You have seen the king going there, not happy with the friend of his son who seems to be a little bit gay, and throw him out of the window. So the king is the executioner, the judge, he's absolute. Nobody can ask him. He has the right to throw you out of the window. You are dead. There's no check of that. The Saudi regime is at that level. The king can very easily say, kill this man. He's causing a secession in the land. That's enough, and you'll get killed.
And yesterday, a man just called for reforms, and he was arrested. It's very easy in Saudi Arabia to be arrested if you ask for reforms, while the government or high princes would say no. So it is the kingdom of silence, as one human rights organization described it.
Yes, they claim they have a judiciary which is Islamic. and you may refer to the judiciary, but a phone call from the local governor, like Salman, the governor of Riyadh, in my case, for example, to the head of the court, saying there's a case and so on of Mas'al, yes, case number so on, close the case and send it to my office. Case for done.
Yemen's President Saleh has clung on to power through thick and thin. He has even fooled its ally Saudi Arabia into attacking his half-brother and longtime rival, General Ali Mohsen al-Ahmar, who recently defected.
According to the contents of the latest WikiLeaks cables, President Ali Abdullah Saleh tried to trick the Saudi military into killing off one of his rivals. It took more than a year before General Ali Mohsen al-Ahmar declared his support for anti-regime protesters, and America's man in Riyadh, James Smith, was told about the aborted airstrike during a meeting with Saudi Prince Khaled bin Sultan. Smith was relaying US concerns about the Saudi airstrikes on the Houthis, a Shia group in North Yemen. It was then Prince Khaled revealed to the US ambassador that targets were selected by a joint committee of senior Saudi and Yemeni officers. The American ambassador's secret cable noted, Prince Khaled also reported that the Saudis had problems with some of the targeting recommendations received from the Yemeni side. For instance, there was one occasion when Saudi pilots aborted a strike. It turned out that the site recommended to be hit was the headquarters of General Ali Mohsen al-Ahmar, the Yemeni Northern Area military commander, who is regarded as a political opponent to President Saleh. Ali Mohsen, a longtime confidant of the president as well as the head of the Yemeni army in the country's northwest, defected last month with 10 other military commanders and declared support for the peaceful revolution. Until then, Ali Mohsen was regarded as Saleh's key military strongman, playing a major role in the 1994 civil war. Regarded as the second most powerful man, he is usually referred to as the cousin of Saleh's two half-brothers, although some reports claim he is himself a half-brother to Saleh.
I'm from Aden, and there is no question that the situation since 1997, at least, a lot of people have realized that the president has been playing a ploy, you know. At one time, he agreed to, in 1994, to the so-called Accord for Reconciliation, which was signed in Amman, in Jordan. And then he just negated on that, and he went back, and all the sort of transformations we're looking for, especially decentralization and full decentralization, so that people could take part in the day-to-day running of their affairs. And he has been stalling all those changes for the past at least 14 years.
What happened today is a real massacre. These young people were demonstrating peacefully in the street, and suddenly they were attacked by stones and tear gas. We will not go back to our homes unless this ex-president to be held accountable for what he did, and he shall be put on justice.
The president insulted us because he has become bankrupt politically. Our response to him is what the Prophet Muhammad said, that a Muslim shouldn't violate the rights of another Muslim.
Ali Abdullah Saleh didn't find the army who can kill. We promise this week or next week we will send flowers to those armies in the presidential palace. We'll go to there, not to kill, not to make a violence. We will send flowers and say to Ali Abdullah Saleh, bye-bye.
Systematic attack on civilians was one of the ways Human Rights Watch and Doctors Without Borders described how Bahraini forces, backed by Saudis, have chokeholded Bahrainis, similar to what Israelis are doing against Palestinians in the occupied territories.
Israel is not the only regime in the Middle East that has been denounced over its rights violations, including the desecration of holy sites. Now, contemporary historians are finding it easy to put the Bahraini regime at par with the Israeli one. For more than 2 months, the ruling Al-Khalifa dynasty has been trying to silence people's voices through heavy-handed tactics. Dozens of Bahrainis have been killed and hundreds of others have been detained or gone missing since anti-regime protests began in mid-February. Rights activists and senior clerics are among the detained, and several people have been tortured to death. Last month, Saudi Arabia sent troops and armored vehicles to help the regime in Manama quell opposition protests. This as Riyadh suspects that the ongoing revolution in Bahrain could spill across the border. The Saudi invasion has also been motivated by Riyadh's failure to put an end to growing dissent within its own borders. But anti-regime protests have continued across Bahrain despite the Saudi occupation. People continue to call for an end to authoritarian rule. Saudi-backed regime forces have also desecrated and destroyed religious sites across the country in an attempt to divide people along communal lines. In many cases, soldiers have attacked worshippers. The Al Khalifa family has offered no explanation for why it's been attacking holy places, exactly what Israel has been doing to Palestinian sanctities for over 60 years. The U.S. and its allies have been tight-lipped on the situation in Bahrain so far. International rights groups have slammed Washington over what they call its double standards when it comes to its stances on pro-democracy protests in the Arab world. Meanwhile, as the Bahraini regime continues its brutal tactics, time will tell how long the unpopular Al Khalifa family will manage to cling on to power.
So I wondered why it was that my government was not speaking out about the abuses in Bahrain. And then I learned something here. That the home of the U.S. Fifth Fleet was in Bahrain. And I thought maybe that was one of the reasons the U.S. was not speaking out. And then when I saw peaceful protesters rising up in Bahrain, just as they have all over the Arab world, I know that my government took 30 years before it condemned Mubarak in Egypt. But I thought perhaps we had learned a lesson. And then when I hear my government saying Gaddafi must go, I wonder why are they not saying the Al Khalifa regime must go? And then I realized that my government continues to sell weapons to the government of Bahrain. And then I discovered that the U.S. government is not only selling weapons to the Saudis, but has the largest $60 billion weapons deal in the history of weapons sales. And as you know only too well, those very weapons sold by the United States to the Saudi regime are being used against the peaceful protesters in Bahrain.
Lauren Booth, meanwhile, from the program, comments at some news on the King Hamad of Bahrain, which may be a sign that he is preparing for departure.
Blood is being shed to the sound of the international community shrugging its shoulders. How many more weeks are we going to have to say that? Now, 32 doctors have been arrested and detained by Bahrain's police. Why? For helping the injured. Another abuse of international law. Still, it looks like King Hamad bin Isa Al Khalifa and his cronies may see that the game is up because he's allegedly moved $42 billion into Swiss banks since the protests began. What does that mean?
Imagine using the image of running over people as a slogan to sell a car. Well, that's what Israel's Subaru did, explained in this entry on PressTV.ir.
Israeli car ad boasts a running over of kids. A new photo advertisement of a Japanese car in Israel has drawn considerable outrage for its implied promotion of running over Palestinian kids. Now, the ad was published by a Subaru dealership in Israel, and it features a scene photographed last year when an Israeli settler struck two Palestinian children with his car in East Jerusalem, Al-Quds. And the slogan, "We will see who can stand against you," which reads in Hebrew, to the right corner of the picture. On to the next entry. It's on Libya. U.S. begins drone strikes on Libya. U.S. President Barack Obama approved this past week the use of controversial drones to attack targets in Libya. U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates said American drones carried out their first mission on Thursday. Now, this is while France, the U.K., and Italy sent military advisors to Libya for the first time, in a sign that many cite to be the same as boots on the ground, which is against U.N. Resolution 1973.
And that's all for this week's edition. Please don't forget to send us any questions or comments. Love to hear from you. The address, realitycheck@presstv.ir. Until next week, it's goodbye from me, Kavitathli. Thank you.